That's the addition.
Like, that's something I developed for the addition, like you see it behind you there. The idea was to kind of weave it in and out of the upright studs. The house itself, like this portion here where the walls are plumb and not vertical, we were able to lay sheathing on this, like plywood sheathing, and because it only curves in one direction, but then like that wall over here where it's angling and curving, we didn't have any sheathing. We just wrapped it in that stucco wrap, the Tyvek, which is just a paper product, and then over top of that they put a wire mesh.
Mm-hmm. And this would scratch
it. And it's scratched over the mesh, yeah.
This is the build wall addition.
That's right. Yes.
Okay. This was the addition.
Right. So yeah, so it's and we'll get into this more extensively after we go through the house. Just wait for, looks like we still got some coming.
I think we're all seeing a different view, so make sure not to miss. Like, my favorite part of this space is something I didn't notice before when
right.
I was over there.
Yeah, yeah.
What you did with the bottles there.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I was mentioning earlier, so like those face east. East is like this direction. So in the morning when the sun comes up, it comes through the bottles and it just like lights up all this interior, which is kind of nice.
Awesome.
Oh yeah, watch back in there, that's loose. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Want me to get the dining room chair?
What's that?
Want me to get the dining room chair?
We can grab it on the way back out. I think we can head inside.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so thanks for everyone making it out. I was kind of expecting pouring rain this morning. It didn't happen as much as I was expecting, so hopefully it'll hold off a little bit longer here. But yeah, it's excited to kind of show you the house after talking about it for a couple weeks. And let's see, check my notes here. Oh, yes. So when I started this addition, which was in 2020, so it's been 4 years now, at the time I was, I did a lecture on the addition for Pitt Osher. And that I have on my website if you're interested in seeing the first half, because like today we'll kind of cover some of that material, but not all of it. And but it's a good, that first half is a good kind of insight into just like the whole design concept behind the addition, which we'll get into a little bit today, but today more so on the construction side of it, and also kind of just the lessons that have been learned since. This today in we'll pair kind of with that, if you're interested.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to find a different crew to do this, or?
So I did have to get a different crew. It was my sons and me and my wife.
Oh, wow.
So we, part of it was, I wanted to explore a different way of building, like than the way we kind of built the house, you know, which was very traditional in the sense of having subcontractors and that type of thing. And but I wanted to try to find kind of a more intuitive way to build. If you think back to like the and this is going back thousands of years, but like the indigenous builders that would build, you know, they typically didn't have building permits, and they didn't have, you know, a set of drawings, and they didn't have you know, all these things. They just had materials and they just built, and a lot of it was just building based on how they knew how to build, being taught by their parents, you know, and their parents being taught by their parents and that type of thing. So it's kind of handed down tradition. But that's very similar to some of the builders I work with for my practice with, we have Amish, carpenters, and they very much, you know, the way they build their tradition, like the reason why Amish barns look the same, you know, year after year after year, is because they just, you know, they build what they know. That kind of passing down the knowledge is kind of the way historically things were done for, you know, thousands and thousands of years, and it's only just recently, literally just recently in the last couple hundred years that we've gotten this new thing kind of called architecture, that where you have these people, these called architects, that say, hey, you know, let's try designing and building something that hasn't been done before. And so then you're kind of out on a limb saying, oh, well, how are we going to do this, you know, as opposed to kind of just doing it the way we've always done it. And so this was kind of like returning back to, you know, a more intuitive way of building, you know, not using a set of drawings, not using measurements, not using a ruler and straight edge. And
So was it fun?
It was fun. Yeah. And so, you know, it was that kind of like, you know, just thinking through it intuitively as you go along, you know, like what, and it goes back to what we kind of talked about in previous last classes, is that you're paying a lot of attention to kind of what your feelings that you have, like, you know, does this feel right? You know, putting this here, you know, is that feel a little bit off, or is like, it makes sense to put it there type thing, you know, not just aesthetically, but even just structurally, you know, like initially the whole thing started out with this doubler that goes across here, and that sits, you know, on a post at this end, a new post, but then at this end it sits on the house. And the thought was, all of these other rafters that are coming in would all sit on this one coming across here. So that way I could keep the loading kind of off of the house. I also wanted to do an addition where you don't really tie into the house, like a lot of times, or traditionally, you actually open the house up on an addition and you know, you tie it in and make that transition clean. And I just wanted to kind of nest kind of on it. And so like these rafters come up to the top and they sit on these uprights that just, you know, literally sit on the house beam going across here. And so there were, you know, things like that. There was thoughts that if I get a good wind, like, and this stuff wants to blow this way, like all these posts that the rafters are sitting on would just fall off. And, you know, that was initially concern and still concern, but it's kind of lived through a number of wind storms, and so I think it's okay.
So you lived through the last few weeks.
Yeah, I know. It was, that's right. Yeah. In fact, I was out here two nights ago. That lightning storm that we had the other night was phenomenal. I was out here like with my camera and I was just videotaping. It was just like popcorn lightning going off, like, really amazing.
So your intuition has been informed by your education and your experience and experience building, conceiving. But what, how, so was this your vision and your kids and your wife kind of, did they have a sense of intuition about what felt right and what didn't?
Can I ask that a different way?
Yeah.
How much of this was clear in your head and you just had to instruct them how to make what was in your head out here?
Right. Yeah, so initially I had the kids, which when they were a little bit younger, I had them, told them we were going to do an addition on the house, and I had them make some drawings and models of what they would want to build. And they came up with some ideas of things, as well as asking my wife what she wanted. And, you know, she was a little bit more practical in the approach, as far as she just wanted an additional space that we could use, you know, for, at the time, like a home office more than anything, because she works out of the house as well, that we, you know, you could come out here, you can work, and you can close this door and be separate from the rest of the commotion. But that said, I kind of, like, initially I worked through these small models you're seeing here, just working through visually, you know, how it was structurally, how it was going to frame, but also visually what that was going to look like, and played around with it in that regard. But to your question, the, what's interesting as far as like kind of that intuitive way of thinking is that, yes, it's informed by my experience in kind of like the trade. And it, yes, it's also kind of informed by my kind of education being taught. But at the same time, you know, one thing that stuck out with me when I was in school, I had one of my structures teachers that was teaching steel and concrete, made the point one time. He said that, even though you have these formulas that you use to calculate, you know, like you size your steel beam or you're figuring out how much rebar is going in the concrete, you know, there's formulas for all that stuff. And you do the formulas to figure that out. But at the same time, he said, you know, you have to, when you do the numbers and you look at the numbers, you just have to like say to yourself, you know, does this does this look right? You know, because like if, say you did a calculation wrong and you end up with a funny number, you know, compared to like having done these numbers on past jobs, you might recognize, oh, this seems way off, like it shouldn't be this high type thing. And it makes you kind of go back and check your math. That kind of like gut check, like he would point out, is like he said, is important, because it's like you want to intuitively, like when you put this beam across here, you want to intuitively feel, you know, that loading that's being put on it by this roof, you know, and just imagine the amount of this load that's coming on it. You know, is this beam large enough to be able to hold that kind of a load? You know, and it's kind of more of a gut feeling. And some of that might come from experience, some of that might come from just, you know, other things, but those are the, that's kind of like that paying attention to your, those feelings that you have kind of just instinctually.
Like the threshold thing.
Right, exactly. So that's, you know, as I was kind of putting this stuff up, those are the kind of things that I was trying to pay close attention to as far as how, whether something felt right. Like you would know, like when you make a cut or you place a piece and it just fits perfectly, you just, you know that like you don't have to second guess it, like that works. Whereas other times it might like be, that doesn't work so well, and, you know, makes you kind of like constantly kind of reflect and think about it, and might go back and change it because you realize, you know, there's a better way to do it. And
one thing that you mentioned to me when you were building this, when I offered to help, was that you wanted your kids to learn.
Yeah, so a large part of the exercise was I wanted to kind of give them an opportunity to like swing a hammer and you know, cut some boards, just to get that practical experience. And so, yeah, that was a large part of it. Right. And so we put this in, and then we started at this end with the lower ones, and we just started, going across with these rafters, and each rafter, if you look up here, each one kind of steps on top of the next one as far as at this end. And so by the time we got to this last one, this one was up pretty high to where, in putting these in place, most of these we put in place with just myself and my two sons. But once we got out here to this point where we had these much higher, we were no longer able to kind of like lift and get it up over just us. So he had a couple of his high school friends come over that I had him get some of his taller friends. And so the last few went in with some of his friends, which was great.
So I took your course, the Gowdy course,
yeah,
whatever year that was. And shortly after that, or not, maybe not shortly, you sent out an email talking about planning this, and you were experimenting with curves.
Right.
That didn't work.
Yeah. So, you know, so Gowdy is, is definitely the master of the curve, and, you know, he's doing it with masonry, and the masonry units are much smaller, so it's much easier to kind of fit it together and make that happen as opposed to kind of these linear elements.
Yeah.
So that was, but 100% correct that I was trying to take these linear elements, you know, using just standard material and still get a irregular curve to it. And so like the curvature of the roof that goes across the top of this and kind of waves up and then, you know, to a peak and then comes back down sharply.
Yeah.
That curvature I was trying to get. And so to do that with straight members, it was a matter of, like you're seeing with the framing, having it layer and lap irregularly in order to get that irregular curvature to it.
Well, you get a lot of movement because I like the hillside.
Right, exactly.
Down and then all the movement in the roof.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And so before, if you can imagine, before all this was here and we'd just be sitting out on this open deck, this wind chime that's over here on the right, most of the wind that we get from storms and even just the wind during the day comes from the west. Mm-hmm. And the house being to the west kind of splits that wind. And so you get some wind that comes around the southern side, and you have some wind comes around the north side. And so when wind comes from the south, it would like ring this chime. And so like from inside, I could tell if the chime was ringing, I could tell it was a southern wind, mm-hmm. which is a different type of a weather pattern than a northern wind coming around this way, which wouldn't ring the chime. And So this kind of roof condition was a little bit, the design idea was coming from that wind pattern of that split is split by the house and comes around and folds. And when those two come together in a heavy storm and you're getting wind from both sides, they kind of like reconnect here. And the house kind of acts at that point like an airplane wing, if you can imagine, you know, where you get this side has a little bit more resistance than what's coming around this way. Mm-hmm. And so you get your eddies kind of happening over here on this side, which is what kind of stirs up this wind chime. But they all kind of like then reconnect over here in this area. And so what I was trying to do is just kind of physically manifest that kind of reconnection that you get of those coming together. And so that's where you get, like you said, the hillside comes down and this kind of gradually the roof does this, and then it kind of comes to a peak where the two are coming together, much like the way like an ocean wave would break as it's, you know, the momentum is coming in and it rises to a point to where it can't sustain it, and then it just breaks over. And so that's kind of what this is reflecting to some degree.
I'm so scared I didn't turn it on.
Yeah, no worries.
So if you get out a little bit, if there's a chance to see from the outside, you can really sort of get a better feel, I think, for the way the curve is on the ceiling.
Right, right.
From the outside, the roof side.
That's right.
So under here, it's a little hard to get, but when you get out there and look up on the roof, you can really get that curve.
Yeah. Yeah, and as we're exiting, we can kind of go out and from a little bit of a distance and take it in and see that.
Do you have any fears of the whole thing sailing away in a heavy wind?
Not anymore. Initially, when we first got it in, I was still unsure what I was going to do with the roofing material. What I wanted to do was to just have it green over with moss. Mm-hmm. But it's going to take some time to cover this amount of area with moss. And so in the interim, I laid, just regular roofing paper down, which would make it watertight. And the roof, we got, the wind was so strong, it would just kept blowing the paper up. And I even got the, you know, the elastic type that sticks down, but even that was being ripped up.
Wow.
So it took a little while until also we hit the summer when we got like those 90 degree days and it just kind of baked it together. And so then once that happened, it hasn't kind of sheared off since. But the fact that, you know, the roofing paper was shearing off, but the plywood and the framing wasn't. So I figured I was okay. I've got a string line that comes down to a plumb bob over here near the floor. You can see, and that strings up to the very top, top framing member I have tied off. And then I put at the bottom of the plumb line, I put a dot just so I can measure over time to see if it's shifting at all. That kind of would give me some indication that it's moving or possible, and it hasn't shifted, so we're in good shape so far. But yeah, even like the plywood, because it had the curvature, I ended up using a very thin plywood that was like eighth inch, so that it would be flexible, and just doing multiple layers. But even as you can tell, just the way it's laid, it's just laid on very haphazard. Not haphazard, but it's not in a traditional manner. Just to sheathe it. Yeah, so actually, since it's starting to rain, we can go inside and kind of take a tour of the house if you'd like, and then come back out. Oh.
He's excited to show you.
So one thing I'll mention as you're coming through, if you think back to the first class, Rowena Reed from Pratt, that had the these models that she would study space and form and kind of like visualizing, how the space feels, you know, kind of those thresholds.
Uh-huh.
So as you go through the house, like space by space, kind of just take some time and try to just like reflect on how this particular space feels relative to the next one, and see if you can notice any kind of perceptual change. And not only from space to space, but even just the transitions between them, because you'll see kind of like certain spots as you transition from one area to the next, I kind of played around with some of the walls and the ceilings just to kind of make it a little bit more accentuated, so you kind of perceptually notice that you're moving from here to there. It's a subtle thing, but it's worth kind of, you know, thinking about as you go through.
Table.
Yes.
Stairs.
So yeah, so on the main living area here. The idea was just an open floor plan to enable, you know, kind of the activity happening down here. It's being earshot and eyesight to the kitchen and that type of thing. Yeah, the pattern. You're welcome if you want, like, to see the backside of the door. You can step aside, but you can see the oval on the ceiling. The egg is one of the few spots in the house that kind of retain the egg.
Wait, where is that?
In the ceiling of the powder room.
Okay.
Well, okay.
Well, you have still the curtain. Okay.
It is the front door.
But not used as the front door.
So, yeah, so during COVID, when we weren't getting a whole lot of people over, we ended up putting this treadmill in front of the door just to use it as a space. And so, yeah, it became kind of just a pocket as opposed to an entry. And it's actually kind of funny because as I was preparing for this class, the week that I did the construction drawings, 2 weeks ago, I was digging through my old drawings, which I had looked at since we built the house, which has been 20-some years. And as I was going through the drawings, I noticed that in one of the earlier plans that we didn't build from, I had a little pocket off of the family room that was just like this that was going to be for exercise area for... And I completely forgotten about that. So it's kind of funny how it found its way there, even though it wasn't intended, because at one point in the design we took away the exercise area, figured we'd put that somewhere else and use that for our front door, and so it kind of found its way back.
It sure did.
I like your step.
Yeah.
Seems like it was designed to be there.
Yeah, like I said, it was just a functional step during construction, and it just stayed.
Do you use your fireplace?
We do. I haven't used it in a year or two, but use it pretty extensively. It's nice.
It's like having a window on the universe here.
Yeah. And and in the wintertime when it snows, it's almost like a snow globe, which is kind of cool.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
So you know how that's spent.
So is your heating radiant floor?
So we have radiant through the floor. The floor is concrete, and at the time I wanted to also air condition through the radiant, kind of like reverse the cycle, which is something that our systems over here don't do, but like over in Europe they have systems that do that. And, never got around to that, but the air conditioning actually is pretty nice because since we're kind of tree covered, really doesn't pull that much AC.
Just a housekeeping point.
Yeah.
Is that there's this bathroom here, but there's also another bathroom sort of above me at the top of the stairs.
Right.
FYI.
Yeah. Yeah. So for those that are not daring enough for the.
Because you will judge us.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So John, we were talking about before from Ironing, brought him in initially for the hinges on the door. And then once I got familiar with his work, he ended up making the railing for the staircase and the railing on the fireplace.
Beautiful. I love the railing. Gorgeous.
So, and he's local?
He is local. They got down in Bloomfield.
Did you design, make the design for the railing? Or did
He, that was his idea. He was trying to pick up the tree motif outside.
Mm-hmm. Oh, perfect.
You don't design for John. You give him...
Yeah, no, exactly. Like I mentioned before, that's kind of the way I like to work, is find talented people, creative people, and just kind of give them the freedom to kind of bring their, you know, their best work. Because most of their jobs, you know, when they get a commission, they usually get, you know, they say, this is what I want. And so they rarely get that kind of freedom. And so when you kind of give them that freedom, they just get so excited, and then, you know, they just... come up with all kinds of things.
You said that with your bathroom, which surprised me that.
Right.
You know, yeah. It would be a little scary.
Yeah.
Letting giving someone like, whatever you want to do. Here, well, I drew it. I have the lines drawn here. Go for it.
So, two of the things I tried to avoid in the house was one was right angles, and the other one was trying to avoid the white color palette. I was trying to just use colors because.
Really?
Not so much, not so much that I'm like against white, but it's just that white is so pervasive, like it's just so ubiquitous everywhere in architecture, and so you know, so I just tried to leave it out. And when we were up in the bathroom, you know, one of the first things that the tile, the woman that was Sarah that was doing the tile work. She's like wanting to bring some white tiles in, you know, which would be kind of like the light reflecting off of the water. And so initially I was like, it's like, can you do a little, you know, a lighter blue, or, you know, as opposed to a darker blue. And so I trusted her on it. And so a lot of times, you know, like you said, it's a little scary sometimes because you're just letting them go. But if you find talented people, it's like the results usually kind of exceed what you are hoping for. So,
I have a question. So I noticed, like on this wall,
right,
it's almost a three-dimensional,
right.
But over here, it's like flat and shiny.
That's right. Yeah. So this wall, the three-dimensional stuff is the same stuff we used on the exterior.
Right.
It's actually an exterior ephes finish.
Spell that word, please.
It's letters,
EFIS.
EFIS. And that stands for Exterior Finish Insulating System.
Okay, thank you.
It was a product that came out of Germany after World War II, when they had, you know, all of their buildings had been destroyed and had to rebuild, and so they just wanted a quick way to kind of like close in buildings. And so they came up with this idea of the insulation board, because they could quickly add insulation value and then just plaster over the insulation board. So it was almost kind of like, as opposed to a more traditional like masonry or, and so it was kind of like just a quick, cheap, efficient way to get insulating and a finish on a building to kind of like make it weather tight. And so, you know, it kind of caught on and spread, and it replaced kind of a traditional stucco process. So that's on most, like 80% of the house has got that on the interior. And, you know, the plasterers, when they did this, kept reminding me, like, are you sure you want to do this inside the house, like with this exterior product? Because they're like, you know, how are you going to clean this, you know, as it like gathers dust and that kind of thing. But then this smoother stuff is what's referred to as the Venetian plaster, and that's a different, that's a true plaster material that they use a hand trowel to put on and kind of burnish with a hand trowel, which is why it has that kind of like smooth, glassy finish.
So why did you choose to do some one way inside?
So if we had the budget, we would have done the whole house with the Venetian plaster inside. But it was, because it was so labor intensive, it was a significant add, so we kind of just cherry-picked a few, like the entry, and a few key places to kind of highlight that. And then the balance of the house had the
the other stuff.
But you managed to get the same color in the two different materials.
Right. So yeah, it's exactly. So it's kind of almost a textural shift as opposed to a color shift or even a material shift. Right. Yeah. But like, you know, places like the kitchen's got the Venetian, that yellow. Places that like the kitchen and the bathrooms where you have that humidity or the water, the Venetian holds up much better. And so we used it in those as well.
Did you worry you were tired of color, of this color? Did you?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a concern. Like the, one of the things that you find is that, and we'll kind of get into this a little bit today with the addition discussion, but like I mentioned in past class, the average house lasts 34 years in the U.S. And a large part of that is not just because like things are wearing down and breaking, it's because people's taste changes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have fashions that change seasonally, you know, in clothing, you have fashions in architecture and home building changes almost annually. Every year there's like a new kind of trend that comes along. And so, you know, depending on what you have, if it kind of get that dated look. And so people want to kind of update, you know, and when it gets dated. And so if you kind of design something that's timeless, you can kind of avoid that dated look. And so, yes, I mean, when you put color up this bold, there's definitely a concern that, you know, you might tire of it or you might, you know, want to change. And so that was definitely a little bit of a risk. And also, you know, part of the experiment, you know, this laboratory of seeing how it goes, you know, would you tire of it? And I think if you, and this goes back to some of the other lectures, if the selection of a color is something that's based intuitively on your personal taste, as opposed to what, you know, my friends might like,
right.
Then I think it's probably going to tire less, you know, because it's something you just love looking at. But that's not to say that your tastes don't change naturally anyways over time.
Matt, what about the, there's some inclusions on cement.
Yeah, so.
And there's also some cracks.
Right. Yeah, there's, those are the shells we put into the concrete, just kind of in the designs when we looked at the cross-section of the shells to kind of inform the design. So we kind of referenced that with dropping that into the concrete. And actually, so on your way out, there's some shells out on the table out there. Grab a shell on your way out. When people come through the house, I kind of give them as a takeaway.
Haven't you found the function of your house changes with time? When you have small children, the house functions a certain way.
Right.
And when you're empty nesters, it functions a different way.
That's right, yeah. No, and that's a large part of it too, is that trying to, because that's most of my job is dealing with those transitions when you have, you know, those changes happening. And so doing a layout or a design that kind of can adapt easily is definitely important. It has been somewhat flexible in that regard, you know, as far as them kids growing up in this and now kind of moving out. And it's definitely a consideration.
Do they comment on coming home, like when they're home? Does this feel better? Do they feel safer here than when they're back maybe in a dorm or in an apartment with square walls? And
yeah, that, so that's the big test that I'm still kind of holding out to see. They haven't really outrightly commented on that, and I haven't probed them on it because I don't want to plant anything in their head.
Right.
But I think, you know, what we'll be telling is when they finally move into something permanently of their own choosing, see what that is.
But remember, too, when Oscar was a child and he went to his friends' houses and he commented on all of their walls being straight and thought that was odd.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is that most of their childhood growing up, we didn't have any interior doors. So the whole house just kind of like was open and flowed. We had curtains like this kind of between you know, the bedrooms and bathrooms. But it was, you know, still something very different than a door you can physically close and shut. So, yeah, I mean, when they'd go to their friend's house and they had doors, you know, that was like a novelty.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think, in terms of them choosing in the future, the only way they're going to be able to live in a place like this is if they build it. You
right.
don't really find this anywhere.
Right, right.
So, and that's
they,
quite expensive.
They probably know a good architect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the other thing I try to push with my clients is kind of like this do-it-yourself type idea. And that's also another reason why I like Clifford Still, the painter, is because in 1951 he abandoned the galleries that were like selling his work, and he became his own dealer, just sold direct. And so that was kind of interesting, you know, because and it was, so it was this kind of very much this do-it-yourself type mindset. And I, you know, you see the popularity on television, like with on the HGTV channels of the, you know, and it goes all the way back to Bob Vila, you know, like when and he show people, you know, now we've got YouTube that kind of teaches you how to do things if you don't know how to do something. And so it's, I think it's very much a shift that's happening, not just in architecture, but in all the trades, you know, learning how to kind of do something yourself. And so I definitely engage my clients in the design process and all that, just so that way they not only feel like they have some buy-in to it, but it also on the back end, it makes it much more meaningful space because they actually had a part in it. And so to that point, you know, with the addition and having them help out, you know, ideally if I'm successful, I get to the point where when they get to be adults, that they don't feel like it's a hurdle to go out and just do it themselves, is kind of the idea or the goal.
Matthew, what are these?
Oh, light.
This apparatus.
That's a speaker.
Is that a
speaker? Yeah, car speaker.
Herbs.
No, it's a car speaker. When I at the time I put these in, the in-home speakers, which was kind of like a new thing that had just come out, the quality wasn't as good as a car speaker. Because car speakers have been around for years. And so I was more interested in the quality of sound, so I just put a car speaker in. Yeah.
Do you have those throughout the house?
Just, I have them here related to the TV, and then I have one in the kitchen and then up in the bathroom so we can play music.
So when you go to a friend's house and it's a traditional straight walls, square windows, how do you feel?
I you would think kind of being in a house like this that I've got some real issue with like square walls.
I think you do.
It's... I'm not like offended and taking it like, you know, makes my skin curl while I'm there, you know, type. It's like, but this was more kind of like just exploring alternatives. You know, is there another way to do something? And is that other way, is there any benefit that it has or offers? And, you know, and there's some things that I find there's a benefit. There's some things I find as a negative, you know, that. That no, the square works pretty well in certain ways, like furnishing. But the, you know, that said, I think spending most of my time in here definitely kind of grounds me in Naples. So when I'm spending a few hours here or there in some other spot, I'm more perceptually aware of it probably than someone else coming into that space because I'm noticing, you know, the right angles and stuff much more than someone else that's the only spaces they inhabit. And so it actually kind of helps me in that way when I go into a client's house, without even kind of working or trying, I can kind of perceptually just pick up on things much easier, because this is such a contrast. So in that way, you know, it's kind of beneficial as for the trade.
Why didn't you build your own furniture?
I didn't have the time. Yeah, no, it's definitely would love doing furniture. And I might get into that now as things, you know, slow down a little bit.
Right, built all his design, the whole house, including
furniture. Right, right.
It was part of the architecture.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm of the same mindset. You know, Adolph Loos before him, I mean, they all kind of had that. I mean, they designed not only the furniture, but the clothing of the mistress of the house and the, you know, the dishware and all of it. I mean, they did everything. And, you know, it's a little obsessive, but, you know, it's fun to design things like a chair and, you know, a table.
Gaudi did too.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here is the orange chair too.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Now, did you want to share about the piano and how the kids got comfortable with it?
Yeah, so we let the kids take over, paint the piano when we picked that up. It was funny, we bought the piano through, I think it was Craigslist or something. And when we went out to this guy's house to look at the piano, he had the top open. And the top, the open part was against, like, the wall. And so, you know, we looked at the piano, played it, and said, all right, it looks pretty good. So we came back a week or two later to pick it up with a mover. And we got to, when we came to pick it up, the top was down, and the top had been, like, all sun-beaten.
Oh.
And we just didn't notice it when we went out the first time. So anyways, we figured, well, with that, you know, since we were going to refinish it anyways, just let the kids, like, you know, paint it. So
they did a great job.
Yeah. So it was, again, it was kind of this thing where, you know, we were trying to have them learn to play the piano, but, like, having them kind of paint the piano, again, gives them some ownership of the piano to where they're more inclined to want to learn how to play it.
Did it work?
Yeah, it worked pretty well.
The center?
Yeah. So the staircase, like I mentioned before, came out of Maine. There was, they had three sizes, and this was the middle size. And so we took I designed this space in the kitchen around, you know, so I'd have enough room to get walk here, and sized all that to so their middle size would fit, just to kind of take advantage of their kind of pre-stock stair.
And then John did all the metal work.
So yeah, he did, right.
All.
Yeah, so we go head upstairs if you want to take a look at the bathroom upstairs.
Yeah, I like your kennel. That's great.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice it until you rolled up.
Right.
And she hangs out in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got a box of bills for paper. You don't have a darkroom
place. No. I've got a friend that I borrow their darkroom at a school up Geneva College. But yeah, I'm in the process right now of making some prints.
Oh yeah.
For a show later this year of some of my work.
Nice.
Yeah.
I built one in my.
Yeah, I want to build one in my house. It's just one thing I haven't gotten around to doing yet.
Do you want to direct
anywhere? They make that part upstairs,
right? What's that?
Phil Frick makes that. Art Natural 300 paper. Is it a rag paper?
Right.
That's a nice paper.
I haven't used that.
That's where you made it.
Yeah, nice.
It's got a nice, you know, it's a rag. Tell us.
Nice.
Is this your wood box that you covered on?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, there's... three 6x6s that were just kind of like laying together. You just tile over it.
It works.
Yeah.
Cut these up there first. I don't know which way. You just let them loose up there?
Yeah, we'll find our way eventually to the.
Okay.
It's a little bit tighter up there.
She just showed if you want to update her.
What's that?
Right here.
Oh, okay. No, go ahead.
Great book.
Yeah, that's wine.
What? You put it in the wine book?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it too.
So these are all less than 7 inches, right?
Hey!
No. Actually, it's four.
Is that the code now?
Four inches is the code.
4 inches?
Yeah, so that's a major violation there.
I want that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, pretty amazed. This was some of his handiwork when he was younger.
Pretty cool.
Is that the duct tape period?
Yep. Yeah, he was making stuff out of duct tape.
Yeah, his talks there.
Oh, yes.
I'm with Frank.
Okay, nice.
We have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, like, as you can feel in this space compared to the spaces down below, the walls up here kind of all lean out. Like when the space we were just down in the living room, they all lean in, and so and also they're much higher. The ceiling's much higher here, and so it just kind of, at least for me, it feels a little bit more open, as opposed to the space down below feels a little bit more confined and closing. So generally, like the bedrooms on the second floor, we were trying to get that kind of more open feel, just to kind of like take the weight off your shoulders type thing. Whereas in the main family room, we wanted to more feel kind of nestled and cozy. So that kind of enclosure kind of helps to do that.
The bathroom is incredible.
Is the moon
shining?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Does the moon shine through?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Does it keep you awake?
No. Heavy sleeper.
Only a thunderstorm.
Do you know Canal's door?
Yeah.
It's surprising that your personal clothes are muted.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so the big joke is that the architects all wear black.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I definitely have that kind of sensibility. So, and I've never been a fan of patterns. You know, like I like solids, but my wife is kind of like, she'll buy me patterns, so I've kind of grown accustomed to it.
This ribbon pattern.
Yeah, right. That's right.
I did. Yeah, I decided I wasn't gonna. It's too much.
It's spiral still sitting here, but is it Sarah?
Yeah, Sarah.
Is that a miniature? Is that to remind you of the fact that...
Oh, you're talking about these?
Yeah.
No, actually this is a local woman here, Alexandra Eschemeyer is her name. She's an artist. And
it takes you on the ins and outs of what he tried to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And she started with like small things like this, uh-huh. And then they got to this, and then she went even bigger than this. But this is how I came to know Aaron, was when I first finished the house.
Right.
He learned of me through an article, and he was doing a show that included Alexandria's work. It was a group show. And so when I was in the show and I saw her work, she had a whole room that was filled with these, and they're lit, and so they're kind of like these trees, like a forest. And so when I saw them, I'm like, oh my God, it's like I got to get some of these in my house. And so I used to have about a dozen of them in this room, and I've given some, all of them but these two here back. The thought is that once the addition is done, I'm going to take them down and put them in the addition and kind of take that one place in the addition where it goes up to the tall skylight mm-hmm. part and have this taller one kind of go up to that light in the skylight is the idea, but until the addition is done, they're still here.
What's your neighbor building down there?
Building this road.
Yeah, he's rebuilding his road. They had a sinkhole the last couple days from all the rain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So just a quick aside, I'm going to build on that real quick for my 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
So Alex had about 30 of these, and she had made a completely black room in a downtown space. It was a 5,000 square foot space, and the exhibition's name was Jabberwocky versus Dada.
Where was that?
It was 9/11 Penn Avenue. It was the second floor.
Yeah.
All the way back. Yeah. So it was like second floor that. Above. Like,
yeah, nice.
Did you go?
I saw it.
Oh, I'm impressed. Brought up. I'm very impressed. Anyway, so I saw Matt's bathroom
on the front page of Pittsburgh Magazine. Then dug into literally every single page on his website and considered his artwork to be his house. His house was more art than it was house to me, and or both. So I gave him a call, and he said, well, I'll do it, but I want to put together a team. We met, I think he came within a day or two, downtown to the space, and said, I want to put together a team of people for this installation, a site-specific installation, which included, his hope list was Kathleen, correct me if I'm wrong, Kathleen Mulcahy, and John, and Potter.
Amanda,
and one other, Glass.
Kathleen Glass.
Yeah. That was it, four of you. And so it's interesting because I knew all of them. I had talked with all of them about exhibitions, and so they didn't really fit in one reason or another. Kathleen was working at the Glass Center, and John was like busy doing his business, and the pottery wasn't sort of what the direction we were going. We were doing more fine art than craft. And so when Matt said, well, I want to put them all together, I knew them all, and instantly is, of course. And so so there was six artists, I believe, in that exhibition. They each got about 20 square feet, like more room than this room, to do an installation, each artist. Eichenmeier did about 30 of these in a black room. They have a light at the bottom in the center of each one of those. Mm-hmm. And she blacked it off with tar paper in the back and had little paths through it. And that's the only light that was in there. And I think there was also music at one point. And then Matt and his team put together a huge chandelier, which was probably wider than that hole at the top and kind of funneled down with sand at the bottom and had glass and ceramic elements. And then there was three other artists I won't get too deeply into, but just worth note, it sort of forged our friendship, and it's been a few years. And so I was able to get into this house too, about to that. See what was going on. So that's how we've met, and we've been, you know, partnering and friends for a long time.
How do you like having so much light in your bedroom? I mean, if you're sleep in ever, I'm sure.
No, I don't get a chance to sleep in. That hasn't been a problem because of that. The light's an interesting thing because it's, you know, that was one of the requirements that my wife had. She wanted a lot of natural light.
Mm-hmm.
So today we really haven't turned any lights on, but we've still been able to go, even on an overcast, cloudy day,
right.
You know, it still gets quite a bit of light in space. And, so that is nice. But yeah, it's, if I were sleeping in, I guess when I retire, it might become annoying.
Yeah.
I might have to get some kind of blinds or something.
Is there a fireplace behind there?
So that there was a fireplace in the design. We ended up taking it out.
Oh, okay.
For budget savings.
So after all these years, what would you have done differently now, 2020 hindsight?
There's not a whole lot. The one thing I definitely, without a doubt, that I learned from is where the, if you look out the windows and you see where the stucco wall meets the roof, because it curves and it's not flat, not the flashing, but behind that flashing that's there, because we have just step flashing that they did, which works out because it doesn't leak. But behind that, because it was just a paper and we didn't have a plywood, we just had that paper finish, we have the squirrels get behind there and they try to chew and get in.
Interesting.
And so now I know that I should put a mesh down all around there just to keep them from coming through. So it's an annual assault with the squirrels that try to get in, closing them up. So I'm slowly working my way around the house, getting that mesh in, other than that, it's, it really hasn't been anything that I would do differently.
Is there anything that you found here that you perpetuate in your other designs?
I definitely do the squirrel mesh on all my
other
designs.
That's
it's like, I don't want my clients to have to live through that. In fact, we have these flying squirrels that are was the first one that got in was a flying squirrel. And it was funny because it got through the wall and into the house, and we were chasing around the house trying to get it out. And I cornered it, which is kind of pretty difficult when you don't have a corner.
Who was this guy?
He was, that's a good question. I'm not sure where he was. Yeah, but I got it in the kitchen, and it was on the floor, and it went underneath one of the toe kicks, and it was like catching its breath. And I got a good look at it, and I was like looking at its tail, and I'm like, that's not a squirrel, you know, because like these fly squirrels have these flat tails.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, you know, what is that? You know, and then I got chased out the kitchen door, around the deck, and it went around this deck over here into where the deck ran out, and then it started running up the side of the wall, and I was like, oh my God, it's going to go back up on the wall and through the hole. So like I was like, you know, pounding on the wall, and the thing jumped off the wall towards one of these trees, and it just sailed, you know, like 20 feet, you know, like with its legs out, and then it dawned on me, oh, it's a flying squirrel. And I didn't realize we even had flying squirrels like around here, but I see them all the time. Like there's definitely a patch of them that keep trying to get into the house. And they're a little bit smaller than a normal squirrel, so they can definitely kind of fit through holes easier.
They're attracted to the house, a different kind of squirrel.
Right. That's right.
So I'm going to answer your question a little bit from my experience from outside. One of the things that I've seen is that sort of a tying theme that I've seen here, that I've seen Matt's other houses have, and that is extensive woodwork and reference is to larger beams and support beams and with that. And then a real serious sensitivity to where the light's coming from, you know, and the way the wind flows and the way the sun works in the space. It seems like, you know, they're all fascinating in that way and perfect. Seriously considered. And I think this house has that a lot. You know, that was considering which way the wind was going in the house. Wind along the
So this was the Mediterranean.
And these, by the way, mimicked the sassafras trees on this deck.
They did.
And the sassafras trees are curvy like this. So we put these in here, and I was like, wow, Matt, did you know those trees? He goes, of course, that's why I brought them. But now those sassafras trees, I don't see them. And I think they got aged out. I don't know what that is. I think it's been here.
Weren't some of these also in this car?
Yeah, she got in the mattress factory. Alex Eichenmeier. Exactly. I don't know.
I'm hearing stories about it.
Oh, yeah, they're all Yeah, if it's possible. Oh, this is a weather break.
Those here? Or, those are Venetian. We brought those back from the past.
I think there's a celestial connection to some of these. That one in particular.
Yeah. Oh, no, I can do that. It's been a cabin. I can do whatever you want.
And also, he's been using a lot of colonials and almost all of his houses. And this is Tadao, our mother.
Right.
This work. He also did the front door and the middle work. It's John and Stuart. Those guys.
Did he do that?
In Squirrel Hill?
Yeah. He did.
All right. Yeah, I'll let you know.
I think Tadao. Actually, I don't know for sure.
Do you hear anything? You know, like the old crappy house you can tear down and start over again?
Get this door.
I'd be totally.
Pretty sure he did the front door. I know John did the, all the metal work, the hinges, custom hinges and stuff.
It would be fun to build that.
So not Bell Brothers yet.
John's studio is right there. In the valley. He's got a little studio space in the windshield. And then this way there, just before the bridge. You fall slumber. But now he's got a big studio down the valley. Huge. If you go down there, it's, it's unavoidable. I mean, it's big enough, he's got notes. He's teaching. He was the foundation first to creative metalwork in Pittsburgh. A lot of the other shops learned from John. John generously taught them thinking that they'd stay, and they left and started their own businesses. So now he's like being more conservative, just teaching his kid, and knocked it out. He's doing great still.
What's the best thing?
It's John of Iron Maiden.
Right.
Remember his last name? Walter. Remember how to use it. Walter. Better there to thank you. It's John Walter.
We didn't know that.
Yeah.
We sealed it up.
Right.
No idea.
Yeah, but now my daughter took the front house and is making it back into a single family.
Sculpture on the wall. So here's the total space of it.
Right.
You know, the stairway.
Wow.
And I have two cups. They found his newspaper from 1920.
Wow.
Awesome.
And then one of her friends, baller in church.
Right. Oh, that's beautiful.
Right.
She said, do something.
That's the way to do it with John, right? Let him go. Yeah, just give him a few simple parameters and just release him.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's
all kinds of. I find interest in almost anything.
We wouldn't.
Definitely not bored by that. Nice.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy you want to work with.
Yeah, he's
fabulous. Space Down the Valley, you might want to drop in.
Did you know you had two burnt ones?
Check it out.
There's like about 1,000.
There's six. You didn't look carefully enough.
There's six?
Yeah. I'll show you all.
This is just sounding
good. Pay attention.
Okay.
Yeah, do that shortcut down below.
So you taught the ones?
Vessels going.
Taught them, though.
That's why they turned out good.
Wouldn't
want to influence them.
This room was Oscar's. He used to have a lock like that.
Did you get that in Australia?
Yeah.
Like started.
No, I bought that at Venice Beach out in LA.
And it was.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
That's a nice one.
Yeah.
We were out there. We brought a couple back with us.
I don't know if this turned into an Oscar.
Yeah.
Oscar,
right.
Question about it.
I saw this, Ben.
Oscar.
You
got to wrap it. We're going to see it.
Yeah.
I'll be there. I got it.
Were they playing?
What's the top on the bottom of the door for?
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
What's the door?
So, yeah, if you want to, since the rain stopped, if you want to head back outside, we'll talk a little bit about the addition.
Okay. I was glad to see that your bookcases weren't just books stacked. I go, So that's actual bookcases.
Yeah.
If you want to reference the graphic standard, you do the old.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Like the magician with the tablecloth.
That kid would love this.
Do you want me to get it in the front for you?
I have that.
Let me get in front of it.
What you? Which version? Yeah.
The one that you have.
Okay.
Three or four.
Yeah.
I have my dad's old one.
Right?
Yeah, I can get that.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Oh, yeah.
25, 23.
I like the graphics.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, it's done very well.
Well, the new ones are
right.
Computer jacket.
Right.
The old ones are drawing.
So right. Yeah, they were back when illustrators, were stylized.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
You graphed on the column?
Next to Madagascar.
teaching English.
Yeah, Oriental.
And she's going to Venezuela. So she's
yeah, that's a Japanese. Yeah.
So I'm like, been texting her because I had set up appointments, and the first one they didn't show
they,
up.
They use yeah. where is a hairdresser?
So she's going for appointments to apply, or she's already
no, no, she's actually already the guy in. That did the
so she came in for a mid student day.
Okay. The Japanese carpenter that I work with, he gave that to me as a gift.
Where is
he? Brought back from his recent trip to back home.
Try to see if I can see myself cooking in here.
It's very comfortable.
Yeah, it works. Very, it works nice.
I parked right in front of two cars. I didn't realize how close I was right. to the entrance. So.
Right.
Somebody might have to back my car.
What? Okay. Yeah, I can back it out for you.
Okay.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
Yep.
You
need your pants? Yeah. Go ahead.
Hey, Aaron. Those metal chairs up on the balcony.
Oh.
Yeah, you grab one or two of those.
Are you, how are you, you have to tell us how you're going to, you said this isn't done. So you have to tell us what your next plan is.
It's not done.
Am I sitting in your chair?
No, sorry.
No, we have to take a seat.
Sorry, sorry.
Yeah.
That way, I don't know what's going to happen. I didn't realize it's like, no, this
is me. I don't know. Say whatever you want.
It's such a flavor tonight.
Oh. Yeah. It's meant to go here. Here it comes. You're right. About 6:30.
7:30, 8:30, 8:30.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Did Aaron tell you that
you
might have to get upset?
It's the hardest one we've ever had to get
upset.
I would imagine if this was
water,
gas on top,
like a dream.
When I can get
yeah,
like the design
I'd be curious, because I've had a lot of architects make some crazy ideas and stuff at home, and they have they want to rise home and three bedrooms.
Right.
Really?
Right.
Well, it's like the cobbler who doesn't have, you know, has holes in the shoes.
Maybe.
Right?
They don't have
that. Yeah.
Well, there are technicians and then there are artists.
Somebody just said
yeah.
So if the wall that's like scraped away, maybe.
Right. Nice.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. A little bit of experimentation.
Truly.
Yeah.
My house. I do all the time. Yeah, no.
Oh, well, that
so, I don't know.
Because he's too focused on the other work. No.
It all seems strange.
Does it pass?
Uh-oh. Is he a builder?
Oh.
Yeah.
Ask him to help you. Do
so does this scare you, or does it make you feel bad that you missed it?
Something like this every day. You can't even. It's a builder's dream. It's a builder. Yeah. Did a good job, man.
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah, it's always fun to kind of bring like the contractors I work through the house, because they get a little bit of sense of.
No, I'm good. He's bringing a couple more chairs too.
Where I'm coming from, but also just, you know, let them know what they're getting into.
Okay, he wants a chair.
Yeah, that's temporary.
I'm just gonna sit myself.
Thanks. Yeah, so I just wanted to spend a few minutes kind of going through the addition a little bit more on some of the ideas. So like the like I mentioned, we started in kind of when COVID broke out, thought it was an opportunity to explore something we've been thinking about doing for a while but just never got around to doing, and
like I mentioned before, when we started the house, this was initially was in the house, and we cut it out for budget purposes because we were kind of over budget on the house. And so the perimeter has the foundation under to support it, because we kind of made that decision to eliminate it once we had the foundation in. And so it was very easy to kind of put it back in since the foundation was already in place, and we just kind of built right on top of it. But it was, so yeah, in April of 2020, we started kind of playing around with some sketches and models, designing it. And then July 4th, we started doing some demo work as far as we had an arbor that was here previously. Taking that down, making space, and opening it up to start putting up some of the posts and rafters. So we spent about 5 months working on it, getting it, you know, the sheathing on and closing it in, and then starting to put the lattice in around the side. And you can see on the outside of the lattice, kind of like the cement that we put on to the idea is that we'll cement all the exterior, and then probably do like a gouty kind of broken mosaic on that as a finish on the exterior, is probably the thought. We also want to, once we get it closed in, all this wood deck I'm going to take up, which will buy us like another 10 inches of depth. And then we'll probably just mosaic the floor eventually, which, you know, it's quite a bit of area, so it's quite a bit of work, but, you know, kind of work on it.
So is that going to be a wall where that opening is there, or is that going to be an
open so, window? Yeah, perfect question. Like, great segue. So there's we got to a stopping point because I was waiting for, so this large window here and the smaller window are going to go in right here. And those are going to pivot. I'm getting some metal work. John's working on some metal to make those pivot in the center. So those windows, you'll be able to kind of like pivot and walk through them and use them as a passage doorway. And so there's also a smaller one where Aaron's sitting, this one over here, that will do the same thing. And that's kind of where we can let the dogs go out, is the thought. As well as, because the other windows are fixed, we can also, you know, open up two sides and kind of let a cross breeze come through type thing. So to that point, like back when we started the addition, this was the design for those two windows, and you can see, and I'll pass this around, but you can see kind of like the circular window and then this kind of irregular shape that kind of was a frame. And so that, much like the, if you recall back the shower curtain that had this kind of shape, and then I went back to just a circular plate just recently to simplify this, you know, this build, I just went back to just a straight circular without kind of like that irregular shape, much the way that I did with the shower curtain. And even with just the house, the rooms of the house, like at one point it was more irregular, and I went back to kind of the circular, the kind of like the pure circular form. And so this was something I just did a few weeks ago. And then gave to John with like the details for the joints and that kind of thing, because we're in the process of getting this frame made so we can get those installed. But yeah, it kind of goes back to those, like the room and the shower curtain, like this idea that having kind of worked with it and had some time to kind of live with it, think with it, realizing that like the pure geometry of a circle as opposed to kind of like this irregular form, or in some cases like an egg shape, there's kind of like a grounding that comes with like a pure geometry, because it's just a simple form that doesn't have that kind of additional part to it that enables it to have a more solidity to it, or feeling of grounding.
So you talked about having to be nimble in you come up against something, whether it be a challenge, whether it be something too expensive or whatever reason. So is that change, is that an example of being nimble, or is it a change in your artistic thought? Does that make sense? I
don't know. Yeah. Like whenever you come up against some kind of hurdle or obstacle, shifting is definitely, you know, it's a conscious decision to kind of shift for sure. And kind of embracing that, like I mentioned with the shower curtain, you find that sometimes the end result is actually better than what you initially had found, you know, because you're kind of like taking on these obstacles and as part of the thing. Kind of along those lines, one of the things that with this addition, and also just reflecting on the profession as a whole, as you, I'm sure you're aware of, the technology developing with artificial intelligence that has got, I think, a lot of people nervous right now about whether they're going to be, you know, put out of a job, you know, with the way technology is going. Giving a lot of thought to that and how is that going to impact not only the architectural profession, but also architecture. One of the thoughts that I've had is that I think coming from artificial intelligence is that it's not too far off, that it's going to develop to the point where AI will enable us to communicate with our pets, and it will enable us, because this technology will train on the different types of mannerisms that your pet has, you know, the vocalizations or the body gestures, and be able to like infer, you know, from that more astutely than, you know, we can, and then also by extension kind of in reverse to do the same back and be able to then, you know, communicate, you know, because you can communicate to some degree right now, but you're limited on how much you communicate. Like as an example, one of the biggest ones is when I leave the house, there's no way to tell them I'm going to be back in an hour, I'll be back in 2 days, I'll be back in a week. You know, they know you're leaving, they know, you know, you're probably coming back, but they have no idea how soon is it going to be. And so, it'll be interesting how like technology will not only enable us to communicate with our pets, but even I think it's going to get to the point where we'll be able to communicate with our plants, and we'll be able to communicate with like essentially everything. Like we were talking before about the microbes that are like eating away at this deck that they're sitting on over here. You know, these microbes are just eating away at it because they have the same instinct as we do, that they're hungry, they want to eat, and so they just eat, you know, and this decay, it's like, you know, I kind of envision a time when technology will enable us to be able to like communicate to those microbes, say, hey, slow down, don't eat so fast. It's like, you know, you can have as much as you want, but just don't, you know, eat it right now. And so with that, I think what will come from that is this radical shift from our perspective of recognizing that, you know, this kind of position that we've been in as humans, where we kind of have this domain over everything else and we kind of like control everything, we'll recognize that, no, like there's this whole environment out there of all these other living things that we're like coexisting with. You know, once we can communicate with them, we'll also start to get some of the backlash of some of the things that are frustrated with us, you know, and we'll start to hear some of that. And so then we'll have to come to a reckoning with that. We'll either ignore it or we'll have to, deal with it. And so to that point, you know, I mean, that's a pretty cataclysmic change for society. But like from an architectural standpoint, it's interesting because as architects, when you recognize that, you know, like, what we're doing is affecting the microbes, you have to say, well, you know, if you care about the microbes, you have to like figure out a better way to build, like as opposed to like the way we build now, where we just kind of ignore it, you know, and we don't even address it. Like, in fact, even more to the point, the industry is in the process of making materials that are indestructible to microbes, that microbes can't eat, you know, these materials that are low maintenance and durable. Because, you know, people want stuff to hold up and they don't want it to deteriorate, which makes sense, you know. But at the same time, you know, they're finding out these materials. Hey, stop harassing. These materials, you know, we're starting to find out that like these indestructible materials that like prevent microbes from eating them, they also hold up, you know, like these forever chemicals, they call them. And they get into your system and they don't break down because, you know, if they're not going to break down for a microbe, they're not going to break down for, you know, your humans. Right, exactly. And so, you know, it's almost kind of like these materials and products that we're dealing with that are not organic. They're not biodegradable. They work really well for what they were intended to, which is, you know, have things that last. But I think over time, I think we're going to find that things that last isn't necessarily on balance. The whole is maybe the best way to go. And so a lot of this with the deck is trying to say, is there a way that you can design and build structures and homes and architecture where you anticipate or you plan for kind of like this deterioration and this decay? So that way it can kind of naturally kind of go back and when it's no longer needed is the concept or the idea. And so that's part of, and I actually should have cautioned you before you went through the house because there's some things in the house that are decaying that previously I had been on top of trying to preserve and maintain until I kind of came to this realization. And so now I'm kind of backing off a little bit and saying, you know, maybe that's the wrong way to go. And so, you know, like kind of letting this deck deteriorate to the point where, you know, we're making the shift to stone from wood. So it's much like the paint question inside, you know, like there's an aesthetic change that we're doing, but at the same time, it's also just recognizing that, you know, there's a lifespan that we'll need this stone for. As opposed to putting the stone in the way it should be done, where it would literally last, you know, 80, 90, 100 years, 120 years if it's maintained. And realizing that, you know, we might grow tired of the stone in far shorter amount of time than that. So...
not specifically. So now that we're here, you talked about the deck and what happened before and the layers that you put down. And
right.
So your house, could you address that a little bit?
Yeah, so you can like see the bubble, the foil silver bubble wrap and that's just literally over top of the wood deck below it. And so the bubble wrap with the duct tape is a water seal that keeps the water rainwater from getting to the wood deck below it. But then just directly on top of it, I'm just dry laying the stone on top of that and choking it in with the smaller stones to kind of hold them in place.
Is your plan to bring that stone the rest of the way over?
Right, yeah.
How about the weight?
So that's why it's not finished, because that place where the bubble wrap is the weakest spot. I was hoping this past winter that I'd get like a nice heavy, you know, 3 foot of snow, wet snow that would sit on it for like 2 weeks and see how much it would move. But we didn't really get a heavy snow this winter. I'm not, again, going back to the intuitions, I'm not feeling good about putting that stone weight on there right now until I'm 100% certain that it can handle it. Yeah, we'll see. It's still kind of an ongoing thing. So like I mentioned last week, I'm measuring the humidity on the underside. Underneath this is the basement, and so I'm measuring the humidity inside the room where the microbes are eating away at the wood, and so and that's been kind of fluctuating between 50 and 60% relative humidity. So it's definitely, you know, the 60% they're definitely eating, but they're not eating as quickly as if it was like 80%. So it's definitely continuing to deteriorate. The goal is to kind of get it down to 50% or lower, sustain that, so that way they just stop eating. And then at that point, I could, you know, probably feel safer about putting the stone on and kind of going in.
Can you get to the joints under there?
Yeah, so I can. And actually, over here where there's the opening is where I opened up and you guys can take a look at this on your way out, but like just behind this You can see the duct tape where I cut open a spot and I peeled back the rubber membrane that was there just to see what was going on. And that's those pictures I showed last week. All of that sheathing that the rubber membrane is on was completely eaten away.
Then you could just get some sister joists every other one.
Right. Yeah. Now that was the thought, but the initial, when we were doing this and we were doing this, the initial idea was to take all this decking out and just go down to the subfloor and just put stone right on the subfloor and put tile on this. But then when I realized that the subfloor had evaporated and there was no subfloor to work on, then I had to keep the deck joists in. And so, but you're right, you could sister alongside those.
So Matt, if you were going to address this house again with the technology advancements, so I'm about to partner this question back into Barcelona and La Familia Gracia, the cathedral. So if you could look back and the technological advances that has happened since you started building this house and you first designed this house. So if you could come back and with these new additions, sort of use this new technology in the AI or anything else, what changes could you see happen with this? And what do you feel, how do you feel about that? And that married with the question, which might be a point, and that is that, you know, the cathedral in Barcelona was designed 125 years ago, and the philosophy behind those cathedrals at that time and Gaudi in the advancements that were going to happen over the next 100 years. He knew it was going to take 100 years when he started it. So I just wonder if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, and I said it's a great point. And as they're finishing up the cathedral now, there was a lot of controversy and discussion over there about how to finish it up, because there were the purists that wanted to hold true to the way Gaudi built and started and just finish off with the same type of materials, same type of techniques that Gaudi used when he finished his nativity facade in Pinnacles. And so there was that camp, and then there was the camp of, no, let's embrace the new technologies, the new materials, and let's build it better than what he built, but we can still build it in the same aesthetic that he has with his, so that way, once the church is done, it looks as a whole, as a complete. But it will, you know, it'll be modern materials, modern techniques that will hold up better over time and be more durable and that type of thing. And so there was that camp, and those were kind of the two competing sides. There was kind of a third one that didn't really get a whole lot of weight, but of some that said, no, you know, Gaudi was clearly an artist, and he clearly was a visionary, and he was out there. He says, what we should do is we should find new visionaries today, and we should have them complete the cathedral with their own visions. You know, maybe it departs from Gaudi altogether, from what the church started out with. But it would be more in kind and more true to his spirit of being this visionary type builder and architect. So it was interesting because, like, you know, you had these two camps that were arguing and debating, and the modern technology camp ended up winning out. I was actually kind of pulling for the third one of, like, just bringing in a visionary and kind of, like, you know, having, and so that way, you know, you end up with this church that might not completely match, but you could clearly see, oh, this is Gaudi's work, this is so-and-so's work. And it would, in theory, if it's done well, if you select the right people, you could have a church that, you know, is just pretty creative altogether, you know, and you can kind of see what they brought to it. And obviously you could bring people in that would be sympathetic to Gaudi's type work. But that said, that's the direction they ended up going with it. And, you know, for a lot of different reasons, which makes sense, you know, from financial and time and budget and just durability. But like back to my house, like with the addition, as I was working on this some 20 some years after this house, and I was thinking about those things, you know, like, with materials and advances since then, this was one of these things that I realized is that it makes sense to build with organic materials, you know, biodegradable materials, you know, that are not like these synthetics. Like, this is a synthetic finish. It's got some plastics in it that, you know, help make it hold up to the sun fading and durability of the storms. And so this is much, you know, working with just wood, you know, it's a natural fiber. Much kind of like with diets, you know, like when you have an organic diet, you know, versus processed foods. It's just this idea of organic architecture kind of makes sense in that regard, because it's, again, it goes back to this earlier point of enabling it to naturally kind of biodegrade in its own time. And you can certainly kind of extend it by, like, you know, maintaining it, or you can kind of like just let it go, and then it would deteriorate much quicker. And I think that's kind of, you know, that lag, I think, is where an architect could add some value going forward, because it's a matter of kind of like, you know, gauging how long do you need this thing to last, and this is how you kind of do that. Might be kind of the direction
that people do that, though. Do people go and say, hey, I want a 25-year house? I mean, it's possible, I suppose.
I think a lot of the questions, not like people only, I don't think about it, you know, because it's not like they just, the default assumption is like, you know, I'm putting all this money into the house, I want it to last, you know, and so they just figure, you know, certainly I want it to last as long as I need it, and, you know, ideally maybe longer because my kids might want it, or, you know, might sell it or whatever. But it's an interesting question to pose, you know, especially in light of the 34-year statistic, you know, that the average house only lasts 34 years. So, you know, even if your plan to kind of like live in the house longer than 34 years, but you recognize that maybe in 10 years you might tire of it and want something different,
right,
you know, why not kind of like do the work with a material that only lasts 10 years? You know, it probably is going to be less expensive on the front end, a lot less work, and also just less of a carbon kind of footprint by doing that.
I want to quickly also, if I don't go too far off, rein me in. But the new contractors working with you and working with other architects right now, one of the things I found striking in the last few years was that they were bringing monitors on site early on in the stage. And they'd throw their plans up onto the monitors, and so people would, that were working on the house, would have quick reference. Do you want to add any thoughts to that, and how that may have helped this or hurt this or anything like that, or just what's happening with that? If, you know, I'm sort of broken English on that one. But.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, there's, technology is definitely coming into the trades and the process. It traditionally, it was slower to the housing industry, the commercial industry, which had larger budgets and larger projects, could afford kind of bringing in this technology in a lot of different ways. You know, like now it's even the virtual stuff. What's interesting is that actually there was just a story this past week that I noticed on the news. There's this builder down in Texas. I think he's in Houston or maybe Austin. I can't remember which city. But last year, there was a story that ran on him, and he had just developed this 3D printing with concrete, making a whole housing plan down in Texas. And he was approached by NASA because they wanted to take his thing and ship it to the moon and, like, build these things on the moon with his, in which he is working with him on. But he was bringing this printed 3D technology to the housing development. This past week, he ran a story where he's developed software using this AI chat kind of like technology, to where you can type in a prompt saying, you know, I want a three-story or a three-bedroom ranch, you know, with two bathrooms, and, you know, you can just literally type in a description. And then this software spits out renderings of the house, you know, visual, like, renderings of, like, you know, the interiors, exteriors, floor plans of how the rooms are arranged. Mm-hmm. And then you review this, and then you type in more stuff, like, you know, this is good, but I want the bathroom a little smaller. I want this, you know, window here. That, and then it, you know, goes back and forth with you and refines it. And then once you kind of say, okay, this is it, this is what I want, then that software then sends off codes to the machine that prints this thing out. As well as also it generates a set of documents to send off to the municipality. You get a building permit. And,
is this the cement house?
Yeah. And
that's so cool.
Yeah. And so, you know, his vision is to go literally from the homeowner to type it in to, you know, walking into their house without having a single person involved. It would just be completely automated.
So you talked about being the concierge between the family that you're working with and their idea, their dream.
Right.
So AI would completely fill that role.
Yeah, no, exactly. The AI would, the technology would enable people to be able to achieve that. And that's kind of going back when I was mentioning before, the do-it-yourself type thing. I think the technology is going to enable the do-it-yourself to happen on, you know, across the board in all these industries. And so, you know, facilitating much the way, like if you think of YouTube, you know, when YouTube came along and it very quickly, like if you have something break in the house, you could just pull up a video and it'll tell you how to fix it. Yeah. And so it's become this tool that we use most, you know, initially when YouTube came out, it was for other reasons that they created this, you know, this site. But now it's become this tool that people use to educate themselves on how to do something themselves, as opposed to having to go out and call in a refrigerator repairman, you know. And so I think much like YouTube, you know, AI is going to offer these types of ways to just empower people to do more and more self stuff, you know, and not have to have someone come in and do it for
and
you.
Even if it doesn't do 100%,
that's right,
it still takes 90% of the jobs out.
That's right.
It's a big deal, the draftsman.
Right.
And all, it's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, kind of recognizing that, that's, I've kind of, you know, partly pushed my business in that direction of the concierge that just tries to guide you through it. But also just because, you know, even before thinking about that, I just think it's a better way to do it, you know, because like I mentioned before, if the person that's going to live in the space has a part in creating it, it's just much more meaningful to them once they're in it. It's a much more, and so the space is more rewarding, you know, and at the end of the day, as an architect, that's what I'm trying to get to, is a space that is as fulfilling as possible. And so I realized very early on, having people involved in that helps to make that more fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And so that's the real drive behind it, but also seeing that technology is actually going to push it that way makes sense.
I think that on that note with you, and specifically with Matt on this, when I first met you, you were doing large printouts and drawings, and then you moved into digital renderings, like they were 2D, right? And then sharing that with the clients, and then into, and correct me if I'm off, but, and then SketchUp, and if you all are familiar, SketchUp can do 3D rendering of a space, and then you can fly through them, you can make walls translucent so you can see through them. You can rotate it, you can go under it and over it, and then fly through it. And so Matt was sharing that technology with his clients on their own home designs, and then being able to change them in quick order, a day or less sometimes. And that includes color, includes sometimes artwork, plants, decking, materials, all that. Instead of using some of the other larger programs, SketchUp is allowing Matt to do like curved spaces much smarter and easier, and elevations, and then it's just more user friendly for his customers. And then he's been evolving a little bit further into realizing that, you know, people are getting excited by that and they can feel that movement through it. And now Matt's sort of going back more and more slowly into making 3D physical renderings out of clay and wood and cardboard, and maybe in addition to some of those SketchUp fly-throughs, and the demand has been driving that. It hasn't been just Matt saying, I think it'd be fun to make a 3D rendering that I can do a model, but his customers have been asking more for that and connecting to that physical reality.
It's interesting because when I, as I was doing these renderings and these animations and walkthroughs and that type of thing, as the virtual headsets came online, and I started incorporating those as well, because those also offer the advantage, like I could sit out on this deck with the headset on, I could look up and I could see all of this before it was built, and really understand what it'd be like to sit out here with this addition. And I thought the headset would be a game changer for homeowners to be able to visualize what they're getting. You know, standing literally out on the site and looking around and seeing all, you know, what's the view going to be out through this window from where I'm sitting. And what I found was that when I also started going back to the physical models, that the surprisingly, even though the physical models didn't offer that much that the headset could offer, people responded to the physical models more than the headsets, and they could just get it more intuitively. And I think it's because it's a three-dimensional medium, and architecture is a three-dimensional medium. Mm-hmm. You know, the headset is kind of simulating a three-dimensional thing, but it's really a two-flat, you know, a flat 2D image. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, all of it's just a process. You know, I'm constantly kind of playing around with different techniques and tools just to see what works best. But yeah, the models came back around, you know, right around the COVID time when I was working on this edition. And since then, I've just been using models exclusively with all my projects just because it works so well. People just get it very easily. But to that point, you know, with the edition, that was also something that I realized, you know, it's the physical aspect of it is that, you know, getting out there and actually building it myself, you know, using tools like that that square over there that he has, to where, you know, you can transfer these angles without like a measurement that you would traditionally do with like a you know, either a tape measure or a you know, a protractor, but doing it more kind of intuitively and physically, I think there's something there that is significant as far as just understanding it much more easily as you're working through it.
Matthew, I hate to say this, but we're going to have to go through, but can we walk, can I walk around the perimeter?
Sure, yeah.
Is it okay to go around?
No, absolutely, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, thank you.
Absolutely.
No kibachi cord. All right.